tent housing displaced Palestinians in Khan Yunis. Also, Israeli fighter jet bombed a house in Gaza City's Sujaiya neighborhood, killing 15 people. The Israeli occupation forces resumed the offensive against Gaza on March 18, breaking a two-month ceasefire. Nearly 1,163 civilians have been killed since then. The death toll from the regime's genocide now tops 50,520, with over 114,770 others injured. And to get more details on the current situation in Gaza, we have our correspondent Abubakar Abed joining us from Deir al-Bala. Abubakar, welcome to the program. Give us an update on the current situation where you are.
Yeah, overnight airstrikes have targeted Sharab family in Khan Yunis, three different airstrikes that have wiped out the entire family, killing 17 people, including five children and five women. And not only this, because in the southern part of the strip, and for over 48 hours right now, the Israeli military has been relentlessly pounding Rafah. And we've been hearing the obliteration sounds from the southernmost part of the strip because the Israelis are using booby traps to wipe out and erase full and entire residential blocks and the city. And in addition to that, in Khan Yunis, the strikes haven't stopped since overnight, and more people are being killed on a very daily basis. This is apart from the fact that Israeli tanks have also been incessantly shelling the eastern outskirts of Khan Yunis, namely Abasan, Khza'a, and Panisela. And those areas have been previously warned to be evacuated from residents because the Israeli military wanted to start off a military operation in the area. Now, moving to northern Gaza and Gaza City, and East Gaza City and Sujaiya neighborhood, after the massacre that took place yesterday, killing 20 people just some moments ago. An airstrike on a civilian car has killed two people and wounded others. And El Sabra neighborhood, which is near this neighborhood, also there have been at least three fatalities from one of the recent strikes by Israeli drones. So overall, when we talk about the current situation, it's just more about more attacks all across the strip, and the Israeli military is scaling up its strikes all across the strip, and the artillery shelling hasn't stopped in central Gaza or in southern Gaza or even in the northern parts of the strip. And there have been, just in the morning, more eviction orders for the population inside Al-Shujaiya and Al-Zaytun neighborhoods in East Gaza City, which means that more forced new waves of displacement and people don't know where to go. And of course, the humanitarian situation is deteriorating every single day.
Yeah, Walker, just before I let you go, if you can give us an update on the situation, because we do know that more evacuation orders have been given, just like you mentioned, and people are now being forced to move, to relocate, even though there is no safe place in Gaza.
Of course, there is no safe zone in Gaza at all. People, when they are ordered by the Israeli military to move south, they are being hunted down by Israeli drones and the vehicles and tanks around the Nizarim corridor. And we've been hearing here from Deir al-Balah the obliteration that has been taking place as we are watching close quarters around the Nizarim corridor, and the northwest regions of Al-Nusayrat camp have also been unceasingly struck and shelled many times during the past 48 hours. So people know that they are going to be targeted in anywhere. So we know that some have evacuated, have fled their devastated neighborhoods, but many people have stayed because they know that there is no safe zone in Gaza, and the same playbook that Israel is using right now will not be accepted by them. So people are staying, and they are bearing the brunt of the attacks. That is apart from the fact that the humanitarian situation for them is dire, and they cannot bear it anymore.
Thank you so much for that update. That is our correspondent Abubakar Abed joining us from Deir al-Bala. Displaced Palestinians mourn the loss of their loved ones after an Israeli airstrike on a UN building in Jabalia left 22 people dead, including women and children. They say the attack came without any warning and no place is safe from Israeli strikes.
There is absolutely no security here. They dropped a missile from the right side and another from the left side. Without warning, they dropped the two missiles without any prior warning. My mom was cooking on fire over there, a child was playing with a scooter in the alleyway, some people were exiting the toilet, others were cooking, people who are totally uninvolved, who have done absolutely nothing against the Israelis. They ended up being bombarded, massacred, left without heads or legs.
This is a clinic housing young children. It's affiliated with the UN, not Hamas or Fatah. As you can see, the martyrs are young children. They're all young boys and girls. In what way do they have the right to kill them? Targeting the clinic itself, not even outside, hitting the classroom over their heads. Where is the United Nations and where is the world?
What are these crimes of the occupation? What are these crimes? Show it to the entire world. Show it to all of humanity in the world, in the east and west of the earth.
The UN Human Rights Council has passed a resolution condemning Israel's renewed onslaught on Gaza. The council also demanded the regime prevents genocide and lift its illegal blockade on the territory. The resolution, which was put forward by most members of the Organization of the Islamic Cooperation, was adopted with an overwhelming majority. It voiced grave concerns at statements by Israeli officials that amount to incitement of genocide. The resolution demanded unimpeded humanitarian aid and the restoration of basic necessities in Gaza. It also slammed the use of starvation of civilians as a weapon of war. The resolution called on all nations to halt ham sales to Israel and take immediate action to prevent the forcible transfer of Palestinians from Gaza. The text also called on the UN General Assembly to step up a new investigative team to prepare prosecution for major international crimes committed in the war on Gaza. Political analyst Robert Fontina joined us earlier. He said the overwhelming approval of the strongly worded Human Rights Council resolution shows the world's tolerance for Israeli atrocities has reduced sharply.
This resolution should have been passed a long time ago. Israel has been committing war crimes and crimes against humanity for the last 18 months. It seems they have intensified, although that's hardly imaginable, considering the unspeakable behaviors of the Israelis against the innocent Palestinian people and the defenseless Palestinian people. So this resolution is long past due. I'm glad it's happened at all. Unfortunately, the United States will continue to block any aid to the Palestinians in Gaza. It will continue to support Israel in every way by providing it with all the weapons it needs, providing it with diplomatic cover in the United Nations and on the world stage. The resolution is one of the signs, however, that the world is fed up with Israel and is growing less and less tolerant of its crimes. So that in itself is a good sign. But there needs to be more action taken against Israel than just resolutions.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has begun his four-day trip to Hungary, defying an international criminal court arrest warrant over his war crimes in Gaza. Netanyahu was welcomed by his Hungarian counterpart, Viktor Orban, in Budapest in an official ceremony. Netanyahu's visit comes at the official invitation of the Hungarian Prime Minister. The invitation has sparked outrage from human rights groups, calling it a cynical attempt to undermine the ICC with the International Criminal Court, criticizing Budapest for ignoring its legal obligation to detain Netanyahu. But after Netanyahu's arrival, the Hungarian government announced that it will withdraw in the coming days from the ICC. The warrant issued against Netanyahu last year alleged that he and his former Minister of Military Affairs are guilty of crimes against humanity for depriving Palestinians in the Gaza Strip of food and aid and deliberately targeting civilians. And to get more updates on that, our correspondent, Data Renick, is joining us. Data, welcome to the program. So give us an update on the situation. Are there protests? Where you are? What are people saying about this blatant violation of international law by the Hungarian government for allowing a war criminal, according to the ICC, in your country?
Yes, hello from Budapest. I'm standing here in the city center of Budapest. Actually, behind me, the hotel where Netanyahu is staying for his four-day trip. You see behind the armored military vehicles, there's a lot of police presence here in Hungary. The official visit started this morning a massive welcome in the Budapest castle with hundreds, maybe thousands of soldiers standing guard for Netanyahu. So a massive provocation to the Palestinians, but also to everyone here in Europe. As you said, if there are any protests, the Hungarian government banned all protests here in the city of Budapest. They are already banning protests since the launch of Alatsa flood on 7th of October. And people are really afraid. When we speak to people on the streets, they are opposed to the move of Orban, but they are afraid to speak out. It's a very, very dire situation. Today, we will witness protests in almost every capital in Europe outside Hungarian embassies. Yesterday, there was a protest in Western Romania because of the Hungarian border in Cluj. There will be protests outside the Hungarian embassy in Vienna. But here in Budapest, all protests were banned. And the situation here in the city center is very dire, it's very terrible. You see, all the bridges over the Danube are covered in Israeli flags. The presidential palace is covered in Israeli flags. Orban greeted Netanyahu. He said he's his friend. And the purpose of the trip, from what we are hearing, is that Netanyahu tries to convince to support Trump's plan for Gaza. So that means the complete annihilation of the Arab and the Palestinian population. And if he convinces Orban to support him, Orban and Netanyahu would have a foot in the EU to veto all further attempts from the European Union to reinvest and rebuild Gaza. I think there's also a second important reason why this invitation is so dangerous, because it's a testing ground for a potential further state visit of Netanyahu to Germany. The new German Chancellor Friedrich Merz already announced that he will also invite Netanyahu. There are tense discussions in Germany how he can proceed with that, but anyone thinks here, observers think that this visit is planned together with Germany to have a testing ground if it's successful.
Thank you so much for that update. That is our correspondent Rainer Dietrich joining us from the Hungarian capital. And onto all the news, Palestinian scientist and author Mazen Komsia says Hungary has violated the international law for accommodating a war criminal.
The leaders of Hungary are really in line in their thinking, anti-Islamic, anti-human rights from the beginning. Of course, as you mentioned, this doesn't abrogate their legal right under international law. So they signed the convention, so they're obligated to obey the convention. So you are violating your own laws to accommodate a fellow right-wing fascist, basically, Netanyahu, who's committing war crimes and crimes against humanity. Accountability starts with the people getting on their government, so the Hungarian people, whom I have a lot of respect for, I have friends in Hungary, that they have the responsibility to rise up, and the same with the U.S. and many other countries. It's time for them to rise up.
Welcome back to the second half of World News. The Yemeni armed forces have shut down another advanced U.S. drone as it was violating the country's airspace.
The Yemeni armed forces' air defenses, with the help of Allah Almighty, were able to shoot down an American MQ-9 drone while it was carrying out hostile missions in the airspace of Hudaydah Governorate. The drone was downed with a locally made surface-to-air missile. This is the second our air defenses have shot down in 72 hours and the 17th during the Battle of the Promised Victory and the Holy Jihad in support of Gaza.
Yahya Seri said the Yemeni military has also targeted the U.S. aircraft carrier USS Harry Truman and other warships in the Red Sea with cruise missiles and drones. He said the operation achieved its objectives. Sarayedin, the Yemeni army operation, said will continue until the regime's genocide against the oppressed Palestinian people in Gaza stops and the siege of the territory is lifted. He added that the U.S. warplanes launched 36 overnight airstrikes on different parts of Yemen, including Sana'a, Sa'ada, Hudaydah, leaving a number of people dead and injured. And now to the U.S., where President Donald Trump has imposed sweeping new tariffs on U.S. trading partners, a move that the European Union has labeled as a major blow to the world economy.
President Trump's announcement of universal tariffs on the whole world, including the European Union, is a major blow to the world economy. I deeply regret this choice. Let's be clear-eyed about the immense consequences. The global economy will massively suffer. Uncertainty will spiral and trigger the rise of further protectionism. The consequences will be dire for millions of people around the globe, also for the most vulnerable countries, which are now subject to some of the highest U.S. tariffs, the opposite of what we wanted to achieve.
The EU chief also said the bloc was prepared for further countermeasures to protect its interests and businesses if negotiations failed. Ursula von der Leyen emphasized that there is still an opportunity to address concerns through dialogue. China also expressed firm opposition to the tariffs on its exports, pledging to take countermeasures. Beijing also criticized the measures as a non-compliance with international trade rules that harms legitimate rights and interests of the affected parties. And that brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Hello and welcome to Unscripted. I'm Kavit Afwai. Palestinian doctor and five-time Nobel Peace Prize nominee Izzaddin Abu-Laish has experienced immense personal tragedy. In January 2009, an Israeli tank shell hit his home, killing his three daughters and one of his nieces. And in October 2024, 22 members of his extended family were killed in Jabalia refugee camp by an Israeli airstrike. Also known as the Palestinian doctor or Gaza doctor, he now joins us in this edition of Unscripted. Izzaddin Abu-Laish, welcome to Unscripted.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Before, during, and after, this is a timeline that I'm hoping this interview will take us through in terms of the journey that you've had. And I'd like to start out with the timeline before your book, which certain events led to you writing this book called I Shall Not Hate, A Gaza Doctor's Journey on the Road to Peace and Human Dignity. Now, we are aware of the fact that you have devoted your life to not only medicine, but also reconciliation between Israelis and Palestinians. Now, at the same time, there have been some wars. Aside from Operation Cast Lead back in 2008-09, Pillar of Defense in 2012, and Protective Edge in 2014. Did any of these wars or anything else alter that devotion that you had when it came to Palestinian reconciliation with Israel?
Thank you so much. It's important to hope you read the book and to understand what is the story of the Palestinian people. The book, I Shall Not Hate, it's about a human universal story from where did I come as a Palestinian refugee and a descendant of parents who survived the Nakba. I am a refugee who was born, raised, and lived in Jabalia refugee camp in the teeming poverty, in the suffering, in the intimidation, the continuous, protracted, transgenerational and intergenerational trauma. But in spite of that, we as Palestinians, we are fighting just to survive. And when I wrote my book to show the world who are the Palestinians who are hearing about the Palestinians, they are not supposed just to hear, to know who are the Palestinians. Palestinian people are people like others with hopes, with the plans, with the dreams, with names, and they succeed and they are achievers. And when I wrote this book after the tragedy of the killing of my daughters and my niece, even afterwards, when tens of my family members were murdered after what we call October 7, I said it clearly in my book, if I could know that my daughters were the last sacrifice in the way to peace. But what is peace? Peace is not just a word. Peace is a way of life. Peace is a relationship. It's about justice, about dignity, about freedom, about rights, about equality. Peace is not going to be achieved by war. War will never bring peace. We need to achieve justice, equality, dignity, freedom, and rights for all. And that's why when I wrote I Shall Not Hate, it means I will never be broken. I will never be defeated. I will never give up. I am more determined than before to continue to bring justice, freedom, dignity to my daughters and to my people.
Well, it's obviously very commendable that you have this passion that's very noticeable in your the way that you have delivered that to us. You could hear that in your voice. And that's what we want to find out from you, as I'm sure many, including Palestinians and non-Palestinians, regarding how you talk about justice, peace, and equality. I'd like to point out to, if it's okay to talk about this, the time that the Israeli tank shell hit your home, which unfortunately led to the killing of your daughters back in 2009. If you're comfortable with this, I'm going to go ahead and ask the question, because it's really important to highlight how we understand this was broadcast live. You were supposed to appear on Israeli TV, from what we understand. Then it came to symbolize the war, based on how it was reported. And you said 2 days later, then Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, who said knows you, announced a unilateral ceasefire. I'd like to find out your thoughts then, in terms of your viewpoint on Ehud Olmert, because he was responsible during the war at that point to order U.S. bombs to actually shell civilian Palestinian civilians. We know that some 1,400 were killed, including some 300 children. Do you think that he really had an emotion attached after what you came to function as when 2 days later a ceasefire was announced?
You know, it's important. What is war? War is not about the soldier who is going to kill and to be killed. War is about innocent human beings, about women, children who are sitting there and waiting to have life and to continue life. War is not to be documented, but to be prevented and to be avoided. And that's what is happening at that time in 2008 and 2009, when we were under bombardment and continuous bombardment. Who is going to be next? I was the voice of the Palestinian people to send to the message. And at that time, what is most painful? I lost faith in the humanity. The world is watching and was watching what happened in 2008, 2012, 14, 18, 21, 22, and 23 until now. They are watching it. We as Palestinians, we play the same color as others. We are human. It exposed the atrocities of the world and the bias and the indifference of the world, even complicit world. So at that time, I believe in every bad thing, there is something good. I am a person of faith. I believe in that. So I directed my face to God, and this tragedy, the killing of my daughter, came in the right time when I called my colleague, because I worked in Israel as a Palestinian doctor. I want the Israelis to know who are the Palestinians. And the Palestinians are human beings, and they give a humanity. And when it was broadcasted live,
it held in exposing the lies that we are killing the innocent human beings. These are the daughters of the doctor who delivered us, who helped us, and that's what is needed. And that's why when Ehud Olmert announced unilateral ceasefire, but do we need to be killed in order to save lives? We should save the life, because every human life is precious. War is not to be stopped. War is to be prevented and to be avoided, and to replace it with justice, with equality, with okay. freedom, with dignity, with rights, and to live by these values. Even what is happening these days after what we call it October 7, with this genocide, with this ethnic cleansing, with this mass destruction, mass displacement, mass starvation, Gaza Strip, now it's a ghost, it's a childless, it's helpless, it's foodless, it's homeless. Nothing is there under the witness of the world. It exposed this world, the hypocrisy and mediocrity of our world. Where are they from these human rights they are talking about by lip service? It's time to live by these values, not in a biased or indifferent or double standards. Palestinians are people like others, and that's what I see it in the world. It's a challenge to the world, and it's an opportunity to the world to start their change in their behaviors. What kind of world do we live in? Is it civilized? Is it human? I don't believe that. The administrations of what we call the Western civilized world, they are hypocritic, they are mediocritic, they are humanly, sure. ethically, morally, and spiritually bankrupt. And Gaza Strip put them under the test. And the test is there in Gaza Strip. It's time for the international community to live by these values. And the first thing to implement it for the Palestinians, and we need accountability and okay. liability of the perpetrators. Accountability is essential, crucial for the dignity and to achieve justice and equality.
See, the things that you say obviously are very well noted here, and I don't think there's anybody that can disagree with that. What I'm trying to understand here from you, and I'm sure many others who will watch this, is to understand the mentality that the Israelis have versus the approach that you have. You know, we're looking at, for example, this previous wars, including this particular genocidal war, where there were high precision weapons that were used. These are weapons that are capable of pinpoint strikes that can hit within a meter of their targets. Why am I mentioning this? Is because there are many targets by the Israeli regime using technology such as what has been used in these weapons. But yet you have so many civilians that have been killed. The stats speak for themselves in terms of the genocidal war, which then puts into perspective and puts up the argument versus what you have said, that the Israeli regime doesn't really care about civilian lives. Do you think that that is a valid point to make here?
Yeah, it's when you speak about the weapons used, everything in life has been used, weaponized, militarized, politicized and normalized against the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Everything, food, water, medications, health, schools, weapons, everything has been used against the Palestinians. But the Palestinian people are a living nation, and they will never give up or forget their rights. And the world, it's time for the world to understand it and to stand by justice, to save the Palestinians from the atrocities of these weapons. These weapons, as I said, and those people who were murdered, who were killed in the sake of freedom, justice, to be injected and to be used, the world will be guilty. The world is guilty if they didn't transform this into justice, freedom, dignity for the Palestinians. And it's important to understand Palestinians, they don't want to delete anyone. They are asking for the most precious thing. It's the justice and the freedom for their people. It's the only nation on earth which is deprived of its freedom. And that's what we need to understand. If they believe in a human life, I want to ask the world, do we bleed as Palestinians the same blood as the Americans, as the Germans, as those Western countries? We bleed the same color. So it's time for them to stand for the humanity and to humanize, not to politicize, not to fuel the war by adding more weapons to kill the Palestinians. We need to add more human human values, more dignity, more justice. We need more water to put the fire off and the war off.
Okay. You, again, have zoomed in on things that you have told us before here, especially when it comes to human values. And I would like to use a quote that you actually said while you held the position of a doctor, the first Palestinian doctor that held a position at an Israeli hospital. You said, "I want the Israelis not to see the Palestinian as workers working for them, or only to see them in the child who was throwing stones during the first Intifada. I want them to see the Palestinians as equal, as talented, as human as they are." But you have Israeli officials right now who have talked about Palestinians as human animals to make Gaza a slaughterhouse. You can see where this divide is. It sounds like it's in a completely different world, the approach you have and the value that Palestinians have.
And that's what I want the Israelis and the world to see as Palestinians, to see us as a human and as equal. When I practice medicine, if you go to any hospital, whether in Iran, whether in America, whether in Canada, everywhere, all of the patients for me are equal. The only difference is the diagnosis and the type of the disease. And that's the message I want all of those political leaders from the Israeli side in particular, and the Americans and the Western countries, that they are talking about equality, human values, and they don't live by these values. They talk about it. It's time for them to walk the talk. For me, when I deliver a baby in any hospital, the only difference is not based on ethnicity, religion, color, or name. The medicine for me and health are a human equalizer, stabilizer, socializer, harmonizer, and sustainizer. Why we deliver them equally and they are the same once they are inside the hospital. But once they step outside the hospital and to give them names or the color to appear on them, we start to discriminate. It's a kind of discrimination, and discrimination is a destructive disease and it will never persist. What do you expect from the people who are discriminated against? They have to fight for their freedom, for their rights.
Well, that's the point that is important here. You have said right now that it's time for them to walk the talk. I mean, they have not done that. And in the bigger picture, when you take a look at the past 70 years or so, you see that the Palestinian issue has not been resolved. And at the same time, their rights, their restrictions, the violations, and of course their land has been chewed away and taken away from them all this time. In terms of what happened with Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, I'd like to open that up. Back in December 19, 2023, there was a Guardian Focus YouTube video. There were pictures of dead bodies that were being shown. They said, these are our nephews, our nieces, our sisters. I don't know if you remember that. At that point, the number of Palestinians that were killed, which is, again, December of 2023, were roughly around 10,000, a number that rose to 50,000 at this point, and maybe even more. In that context, where does peace between Israelis and Palestinians rank? How could that happen after this Operation Al-Aqsa Flood with the number of Palestinians that have been killed by the Israeli regime?
The peace, as I said to that, it's not a true killing, and this will never bring safety or security to Israelis. The Israelis are less safe, secure, unless the Palestinians are free, dignified, equal, to be independent, and their safety, security is from the Palestinian safety, security, future, and the freedom. That's the most important thing. But we need the world. As you mentioned, more than 50,000 Palestinians are killed. About 70,000 Palestinians are killed. Until now, many of them are under the rubble. And who are killed? It's the children. As I said, Gaza Strip has turned into a ghost, a childless, parentless, homeless, lifeless, foodless, schoolless. What else is remaining? It's a crime, as I said, it's a crime against the humanity. It's the crisis of the humanity, and the world is watching it. So we need, why it's repeated, we said it, my daughters were killed in January 2009. But why it's repeated afterwards, we say never again, never again, never again. You know why it's repeated? Because lack of accountability, lack of liability. It's time for the world to stand, and Israeli administrations and leaders should be accountable to what is happening. happening. And that's what is needed from the international community to stand up and to speak out. And those perpetrators, those criminals, to be accountable. Accountability is the guarantee to stability and to achieve the peace we are looking for, and to follow the international institutions. We have the, why do we have the United Nations? Why do we have the ICC? The last thing to control stability and to give stability to our world is the international institutions and the rule of law. The rule of law with one standard, not with double standards or being indifferent or selective in these rules of law. And that's what is important. That's why I said it's the test to our world to live by these values. And unless we implement and endorse these values based on rule of law, on all, the rule of law is our umbrella and it equalizes between all, not based on ethnicity or political agenda.
Okay, Doctor, you talked about accountability, which raises the question as to whether that's going to be something that can actually be achievable. I'm guessing that you obviously are talking about the Israeli regime officials. Perhaps you might be talking about the U.S. also, who's providing the assistance and the protection when it comes to Israel being shielded, for example, at the U.N. You also talk about the rule of law, but I'm sure when you talk about the rule of law in Israel, it's not something that can apply. Obviously, that, I'm guessing, is something that's a given because of what Israel has done, not only in this genocidal war, but previously in terms of violations of Palestinians. We want to figure out how it is that your approach with the reconciliation that you have recommended is actually something that is applicable right now or not, based on how the landscape has changed. Do you think that that is still something that we should strive for?
No, reconciliation, when we speak about reconciliation, what do we need? What do we mean by reconciliation? Reconciliation is to resume functionality, is the rehabilitation, to go back to the right situation, and should be based on the truth and acknowledging what is happening based on the diagnosis of the problem. The Palestinian people are under occupation, are colonized, are oppressed, are suffering, and the Israelis are occupier and oppressing. So we need to equalize with them and to end the occupation. And that's what is important. It's not just reconciliation, let us move together. There should be certain requirements to achieve it, to end the occupation, the Palestinians to get their right, to get their freedom, to get their independence. And that's what is important. Without that, it's not reconciliation. No one can coexist with a disease. No one can coexist with oppression, with occupation. We want to coexist as equal, as a free. And we can reconcile it if these needs are fulfilled. And as you said, the rule of law, I believe, I fully believe in this world, there is nothing called unconditional impunity, unconditional support. We need this support to be based on good acts. And what the Americans, as you said, the American administration is complicit in the genocide committed against the Palestinians. And what they did and the Israelis are doing are destructive to them, destructive to the Palestinians, and destructive to the world. It's time to save the world from these destructive political, really, savage, really brutal acts. It's time. We need the rule of law and all to be accountable. And I appeal to the world, because you see it these days in the world is polarized, is divided. The administrations in one side taking one side, and the public on the other side. The public is starting to be aware of what is happening and the injustices against the Palestinians.
Okay, I'd like to point to a joint poll. This poll was conducted by the Palestinian Center for Policy and Survey Research, PSR, in Ramallah, and the International Program and Conflict Resolution and Mediation at Tel Aviv University. The results of this poll is somewhat shocking. It says that the Jewish Israelis were asked to select one of the four options that described the Palestinians' intentions on October 7th and then the current genocide. And one of the results of the poll said that Jewish Israelis, 66% of them, selected that they want to commit genocide against Palestinians. 27% believe the aim is to conquer land and expel the Jews, the most extreme of four options. If you have 66% of Jewish Israelis who think that there should be genocide committed against Palestinians. You could imagine what Israeli officials think. Therefore, this comes to the notion as to where do we go from there? Because we have reached now in a point in this conflict where it has been taken to another level. It's not the same scenario as before.
No, it's the same continuity because the Israeli community, the Israeli political map is moving to the right wing. It's nothing new, 66, even this is hopeful. 66, I thought that you would say it's 86. So I am sure they are going to the extreme right-wing government because the current Israeli government administration is controlled by right-wing extreme fanatic government under the leadership of Netanyahu, Smotrich, Ben-Gvir, and I hear all of the incitements. What do they speak? What do they say about the Palestinians? Even the quotes they are describing the Palestinians are war criminals, are war crime against the humanity. But this is, and why all of this? We need to ask why they should be accountable to that. And what prevents accountability is the complicit and unconditional support by the American administration and the Western countries. So it's time for these countries to save the world from these self-destructive acts and the encouragement of the Israeli administration to take this path and to have it. It's a wrong administration, and that's what is happening. We need to resume trust, otherwise we live in jungle. The strong get to eat the weak. Where are we from the rule of law? So as I said, it's time for the world to stand by, and I see what happened October 7th, it didn't come out of the blue, because it has been the cumulative acts for more than seven decades. We as Palestinians, we have been suffering since the Nakba, since 1948. So it came to expose the world. And that's what happened with October 7. And I see it as an opportunity. It's a silver lining opportunity for the world to reflect on it and to understand the causes behind it, not just to blame. The root causes of it, and what can they do to make the world? We need a reform in our world.
Uh-huh. Well, you just touched on the whole issue of this program, this conversation we're having, where you talk about, if I understood you correctly, October 7th being an opportunity. The opportunity that you're talking about when it comes to the Israeli regime and the U.S. really showed itself when it comes to the U.S. President Donald Trump, who has justified the U.S. taking over the Gaza Strip, right? He's backtracked a little bit, but he wants to transform it into a real estate development. The Riviera of the Middle East is what he calls it, to build apartments on over dead bodies that are probably still below there somewhere. That's the type of rule of law that doesn't apply to this U.S. president and doesn't apply, obviously, to the Israeli regime officials. How can there be any, therefore, advancements when it comes to anything that has to deal with reconciliation between Palestinians and Israelis?
Yeah, you know, I smile when I hear this. When President Trump was elected, and they consider him elected by democratic election, but if any other country to elect someone like Trump in any other country, they would stand against the election of someone like President Trump, who is completely biased, who is fanatic, and he is leading to disturbance in our world. He wants to buy Gaza. To buy it from whom? To buy it from 2.3 million or 13 million Palestinians? From 13 million Palestinians, it's not only for one. And it's not real estate that he is dealing with that. And that's the issue of materialized world. He thinks of everything as materialized, as a developer, as construction, as a real estate. Palestine is what we call it, is a holy, sacred land. It's what we call it, Ardwaqf. Ardwaqf. No one can sell it, and it's owned by humanity, by people who own it, and no one is allowed and can give up 1 millimeter of Palestine. And that's, he has to understand it. Palestine and Gaza Strip was a Rivera before Trump was there. It was a Rivera, and Palestinian people are rooted there. It's not about the land. It's about the history, about the culture, about the memory. I can say to you about the holy people who were killed in the sake of justice, equality, freedom. The first thing when I go to Gaza, and I am waiting to go to Gaza, the first thing when I go, before I go to my home, I visit the graves of my daughters, my mother, my father. I will go to visit the graves of my sisters, my nephews, my nieces, to say to them, we didn't forget, we will never give up. We promise you, and I gave them the oath, I will never rest, I will never relax until I meet them. I am a Muslim with deep faith. I believe one day I will meet them, but to meet them with the big gift that their holy souls, noble blood, were never wasted. It was transfused, injected into a vein of hope, justice, dignity, equality, and the freedom of the Palestinian people. We all feel guilty if these holy, sacred human souls were wasted.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you so much for joining us in this program. It was very enlightening, and thank you for the compassion that you delivered to us, Professor Dr. Izzadine Aboulaish. And with that, we come to an end of this edition of Unscripted. You were just listening to Professor Dr. Izzadine Aboulaish from Ikava Tafwai. Thanks for being with us.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You are listening to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be examining a very significant question, and that question is related to an ethical malady which all of us more or less are afflicted with, and that is anger. As you know, anger and sometimes has very bad consequences. A lot of times we do things when we're angry that we later on we regret that we having done. And in the West, you know, they have anger management, and they tackle this from a psychological point of view, and they look at it, they try to remedy it through therapy and other kind of secular practices. But today we want to ask, is there a religious remedy for this, or how has religion advised us to remedy this problem? Of course, as you know, getting angry is not always incorrect. If we get angry for the sake of God, this is something good. So we need to mention this here just so that we don't get confused. For example, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "He who displays ill feeling towards the immoral people and gets angry for the sake of Allah, Allah will get angry for his sake and will render him well pleased on the day of resurrection." Getting angry, you know, at other times might be incorrect and it might be very dangerous. In connection with this question, we can take inspiration from the hadith which have been narrated from the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. The Prophet said, "O Ali, do not get angry. And if you do get angry, then sit down and reflect upon the power of your Lord over his creation and his clemency towards them," right? I mean, God Almighty, he has, you know, obviously a lot of us do things that, you know, would upset God. That's very obvious. But, and he has the power to take retribution from us anytime he wants. but he doesn't, and that, you know, he exerts his clemency and his mercy over us. So if we think about this and ponder over it when we get angry, it will also push us and encourage us to also act clemently and mercifully and kindly towards others, to people who we might be angry with. In continuation, the Prophet said, "And whenever anyone tells you condescendingly to fear Allah, expel your anger and remind yourself of your clemency." You know, you can remind yourself that, hey, I'm not such a bad person. I'm a kind person. I'm a merciful person. I don't have to get angry and upset with this so-and-so because of what he did to me. In another beautiful hadith, Imam Ali himself said this: "Remedy your anger with silence and your carnal desire through reason," through your reason, right? You know, if we remain silent, and obviously silence with deliberation over the matter, this can help us control our anger and silence it. And also by using reason and thinking about the outcomes of getting angry and what it might lead to. These are some ways in which we can suppress our anger. And suppression of our anger at these times is very praiseworthy. In one beautiful verse of the Holy Quran, we read, "And those who suppress their anger and excuse the faults of people, wal qadimin al ghayz wal afina an nas." This is a beautiful verse of the Holy Quran related to this subject. In another verse, Allah says, "Those who forgive when angered, وَإِذَا مَا غَزِبُوا هُمْ يَغْفِرُونَ." Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the remedy for anger in the light of religion and the hadith of the infallibles, alayhi wa salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Dozens of Palestinians are killed in the latest Israeli strikes on the Gaza Strip as the regime continues its aggression on the besieged territory. Germany armed forces say they have shot down another US MQ-9 drone over Hodeidah and targeted US warships in the Red Sea with drones and cruise missiles. And the EU chief says the bloc is ready to respond to the latest U.S. tariffs as Washington's trading partner slammed Trump for imposing new levies. Thank you so much for joining us. More Palestinians are falling victim to Israel's incessant air and artillery strikes in Gaza as the regime's genocidal war rages unabated across the besieged territory. Over 50 people were killed in the latest attacks across the Gaza Strip, including four people who lost their lives in an airstrike on 10.